Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Chris Hutton. Now, today's episode will be a little bit shorter. I've got to run off to some appointments, unfortunately, so I've got to cut my time a little bit short. But I do think we still have some interesting topics today. The first is some more interesting reflections on the political landscape as evidenced through various by-elections around the country. We're also going to be talking a little bit about Eskom. We spoke the other day about its profitability, but the problems with Eskom and money remain. So let's get into the first story. Yesterday, around the country, there were a series of by-elections held in different wards across the country. We had one in the rural Eastern Cape, one in Mamelodi in Tswane, and one in Emalahleni, which is also known as Witbank. And it looks like the DA were the big winners of those. So let's just start with the rural Eastern Cape one. That one was pretty uninteresting. The ANC won 90% of the vote there. Their only competition was the ATM, who got 7% of the vote, basically. Just absolute total clobbering. No one really ran in that one. ANC very secure there. But here's the interesting ones. Let's start with Emalahleni. In Ward 26 in Emalahleni, the DA managed to win the ward, beating the ANC quite narrowly in the ward with 839 votes to 809 votes. That's 37% of the vote to 35% of the vote. This is partly because MK appears to have split the ANC vote in the ward, managing to take it down from about 59% in the last local government election, down to its sort of 35% with MK taking a big chunk. The Freedom Front Plus also took a bit, I think, of the DA's potential vote here, but ultimately didn't manage to stop the DA winning the ward. But then here's the really interesting result. Tswane. And here, the DA achieved a very good performance with 11% of the vote. Now you might think, okay, well, that doesn't really mean much, right? This is a ward where the ANC got sort of 50% of the vote. In fact, compared to the last local government election, the ANC vote total actually went up slightly, going up from 46% or 47% to 51%. But the DA percentage of the vote here has climbed from 3.5% of the vote in the last local government election to 11.5%. And what's also interesting is if you take what Action SA got in this ward in 2021 in Mamelodi, they got about 5%. So even the DA plus Action SA together didn't equal this DA performance in Mamelodi, because together they would get about sort of 9% of the vote, and they got 11.5%. So the ward was won by the ANC, but you'd expect it to be won by the ANC. Mamelodi is one of the heartlands of the ANC support in Tswane. The DA is starting to get numbers around the 10% mark and higher in townships in the Gauteng metros. Now, it's far too early to say if this is a widespread pattern, but if that is indeed a case that gets replicated in other by-elections and in other wards, the next local government election is going to go very well for the DA indeed. Traditionally, the DA gets anywhere between sort of 3 to 6% of the vote in township wards. If they're doubling that or tripling it, then we are going to see big shake-ups in the next local government election. I don't know, Chris, did all of that make sense to you? What did you make of these political developments?
Very important to keep in mind the sort of MK's future, which on all, you know, sort of readings and analysis isn't necessarily long. MK isn't necessarily long for this world, which means for as long as it takes votes off the ANC, it's a party like the DA needs to try and take advantage thereof. And that window could be short to medium term, not necessarily very long term. So if this is now replicated in other by-elections and other places around the country, especially in the metros, I think, sort of quote-unquote urban and maybe semi-urban areas as well, then you look at a wider pattern where disgruntled ANC voters vote for a party like MK as a sort of protest vote. those who shift then towards a party like the DA, there's an big opportunity there for the DA. So let's see again how this kind of thing is replicated going forward. But if you tie this to the sort of narrative around the ANC, just sort of every, you know, press release, every media appearance, things like the Madlanga Commission, the National Dialogue, how at every opportunity it's South Africans expressing their frustration with the ANC on the biggest media platforms and then on social media, WhatsApp groups, linked to declines in by-election results in your urban centers, your most important metros like Tswana is. Then I think, yeah, all the red lights are flashing on the ANC dashboard going forward. And there's no real reason to see that the party can address this. I didn't see at which specific opportunity it was, but the Secretary General, Fikile Mbalula, again today said, the ANC, I'm paraphrasing, but he said the ANC will not have any patience for corruption amongst its members and its representatives. And the broad reaction was, what's different this time? You know, what that level of sort of skepticism has now been reached with the ANC and its comms, and that filters through into voting behavior.
So just two things. One, I slightly misspoke in describing the Emalahleni one. The Green Front Plus didn't put up a candidate, which I suspect is one of the reasons why the DA managed to just squeak out the vote win there. But the other interesting thing about this Mamelodi by-election was that you know, you might sometimes get results like this when turnout is very different. And indeed, turnout was a little bit lower than it was in the last local government election here. Last local government election, this Mamelodi ward produced 33% turnout, which is, you know, very low. This time in this by-election, it was about 29% turnout. And yet, in terms of absolute number of votes, the DA number of votes went up significantly. In fact, if you add Action SA's votes from 2021 to the DA's votes in 2021, the DA in this by-election still got more votes in total. And I believe the ward boundaries are the same. So I think this is another hopeful sign for the DA and another sign that the sort of political realignment in South Africa really is continuing. I mean, Chris, I just want to drill down a little bit on what makes you so sure that MK is not long for this world, as you said. You know, what does medium term mean? Is there still going to be an MK in 10 years, do you think? Or is it 5 years? What's your thought behind that?
Yeah, I'm glad for the point around figuring out exactly how MK's sort of prospects look going forward. So I base my assessment, number one, on the kinds of individuals in the leadership of the organization, where a lot of it is built around sort of patronage and influence and access to the leader. And when Zuma passes away, the sort of fighting over the empire with the spoils, the probability is higher towards just the infighting consuming the party completely and trying to protect yourself and making sure that if MK continues in any kind of way, you get out other people in the leadership who you think could bring you down. So that, I guess, what we're kind of seeing in the ANC now, with again linking it to the revelations by Lieutenant General Mkhonazi at the Madlanga Commission, we saw what happened this week with the former minister Nati Mtetwa in France, and the sort of pressure coming down to bear on the ANC. I think that's going to be exponential in MK should that kind of central figure that is Jacob Zuma no longer be with us. So number one, it's the sort of leadership, and number two, is around the side, you know, this kind of thing where the party, I think, timed it very well, is its sort of announcement that it was going to contest the elections, because it realized you need to make the most of that. Now the question is around building structures and building avenues where, yes, you can attract disgruntled ANC voters, and I don't discount the work that MK did, especially in KwaZulu-Natal, to capture ANC structures, I think, outright. But maintaining that kind of thing going forward, I ask serious questions about. So I haven't yet seen the sort of evidence for that. So that's why I think the impact is more short to medium term. So let's say 1 to 2 years going forward now, and then past that into 2029, let's see what happens. A lot of this analysis is going to depend on how they perform in next year's local government elections. Because if you do well, you again, it's sort of the rising star versus the declining prospects of the ANC and the EFF. if you can build on that momentum, maybe then in next year's local government elections, you make a stronger case for MK. But I'm not willing to bet everything on them being the main party on South Africa's left in the long term.
I think it's a reasonable assumption, but you know, despite MK's many organizational problems that we're all well aware of, it still has been continuing to produce relatively good results. I mean, in this Ward 10 election, MK, you know, we think of MK as being a very KZN party, but MK does surprising strength in Gauteng. In the same Mamelodi by-election, the DA got 11%, MK got 13%, which is not anything to sneeze at. And it's the kind of thing that'll make them, I think, quite a big player in Gauteng's politics going forward after the next local government election. So, you know, who knows what will happen to the party, but it is still definitely going to be quite an impactful thing for the next couple of years. Okay, let's move on to our next story. And this is just a little bit about Eskom. So Eskom recently managed to achieve its first profitability since 2017, when it posted, I think it was about 26, 25 billion rand profit before tax in the last financial year. This was helped by the fact that SARS allowed it to get a one-time sort of fuel rebate, without which their profit only would have been 11 billion rand. But, you know, profit is profit, and that's a big turnaround for Eskom's finances. But the scale of the problem that Eskom has been facing continues to kind of boggle the mind. So Eskom has announced after some investigations that they reckon that in the last 3 years, they've lost 20 billion rand in potential electricity sales to fraudulent prepaid electricity vouchers, which were likely printed or distributed with the assistance of people working in Eskom. These are tokens using a compromised online vending system, which Eskom says in just the last fiscal year probably by itself was about 7 billion rand worth of lost potential revenue. This is where you have essentially tokens being issued that were not, where the money being paid for those tokens does not actually end up into Eskom's hands. And Eskom believes that this could only have been possible with the collusion between Eskom staff, who they say have been suspended, and illicit operators to circumvent controls. The suspicious activities were reported to various law enforcement agencies for further action, said the Eskom statement on this. But Chris, I mean, it's kind of amazing, like 20 billion rand in 3 years, you know, that's almost Eskom's entire profit in the last financial year, just from this one aspect of crime. And I think it shows how just pouring more money into Eskom has never been the solution. Turning it around has always been the most important way to actually fix things. Better management, not more money.
Yeah, and sort of market incentives around real competition. So in generation and distribution, from municipalities, from households, from businesses, from other electricity companies, and why, at least from a sort of ideological point of view, it's so important for Eskom to continue maintaining that monopoly wherever it possibly can. I mean, so many people have tried to shift to solar where they can afford it, and even that has impacted, of course, on Eskom's profitability and revenue streams. If you take this particular example in the story and sort of extrapolate it, you see again just how practical governance of SOEs is downstream from the ideology that the ANC has pursued for over 30 years now, where it's about state centralization management. And it's not a corruption in the system based on the National Democratic Revolution. Corruption isn't a bug, it's a feature. It's incentivized to happen. We see the similar possibility and risks in the NHI. And linking this to discussions earlier this week from the SIU and the investigation at over 2 billion rand in corruption, worth of corruption at Tembisa Hospital. When you centralize things like this, when you have the fund of the NHI board, the members of which are appointed by the minister and report to the minister, that isn't to say that the given minister is going to be corrupt, but it incentivizes that kind of control over billions of private and public sector resources. So if we link it back again now to Eskom and the energy situation, you just incentivize that this kind of thing will happen time after time after time. And to turn it around and fix it is such a massive undertaking. So to give some credit to the leadership of Eskom, from focusing on the generation side, we've got the energy availability factor of the coal fleet has improved. And you can't, that doesn't happen just on the back of burning more diesel. So I'm not saying that the diesel burning hasn't happened and using the open cycle gas turbines, but you get an energy availability factor of above 70% by using your coal fleet like it should be used, refurbishing, doing basic maintenance, et cetera, et cetera. It's one thing to get the operations right and to give credit there, but to look at the broader systems and the broader networks, that kind of undertaking really is massive. And a part way of breaking that up, those vested interests, those corrupt incentives, is to introduce real competition to Eskom. It's not going to happen just by getting the right people in the right places kind of thing, because again, then you put so much sort of on just basic human nature and the kind of incentives for corruption. I think the positive work that has been done at Eskom, that kind of thing gets undermined if the government doesn't follow through on the kinds of ideological and policy reforms that we need in our electricity space. And then this kind of thing just happens time and again, and will continue to drag Eskom further down into the sort of debt quagmire. Maybe earlier this year, or hopefully, you know, more recently, the latest updates around Eskom's debt, you know, more than 500 billion. That kind of thing doesn't get turned around without the right policy changes as well, if at all.
And, you know, there's a lot that can be done just to manage some of these things better by doing basic management stuff. Like, and I'm glad to see that they have suspended these guys. But, you know, it should be when something goes wrong like this, like there is theft from inside the company of 20 billion rand, suspend anyone potentially involved, investigate who's guilty, and fire the ones who are guilty doing things improperly or illegally. You don't have to wait for the justice system to do it, which is, you know, all too often what we see in so many government things, which is that, you know, people don't get fired until they've literally been sentenced for corruption, which even if everything is handled correctly and investigated properly, in our legal system can take literally years and years to go by. So that's a simple management thing that can be done that I think, you know, SOEs could do a lot. And as you say, all the reforms, like encouraging competition. In fact, this kind of stuff only underlines that point, because there'll be more incentive for Eskom to make these decisions if they had to be properly competitive, rather than just letting the state protect them as has happened up till now. Anyway, okay, with that in mind, that's all that we have time for today. Thank you very much for watching. We hope you found this show interesting. We will be back on Monday with the Daily Friend Show. There will be no show tomorrow. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.